Yeah. Mine won't be very interesting, probably.
Everything's interesting. Okay, yeah, I just had this one. Even after all this time, I still tend to put plugs in the wrong place. A good place to start for you and me is just, you were born here.
Yes, I was born at Flat, Alaska.
Where is Flat? Does Flat still exist?
Yes, yes, it's a little mining town. And at that time, there were a lot of people. Well, when we lived there, it wasn't during the gold rush. Mm-hmm. But it's, if you know where Bethel and McGrath,
yeah,
in that general direction, and Holy Cross, in through that area, little mining community, and I was born there.
Had your dad and mom just come over, or were they?
No, were they? My dad came to the United States from Austria, mm-hmm, in 1910, and to Alaska in 1912, mm-hmm, and he lived in the Fairbanks area. He came in from, well, he walked in from Valdez to Fairbanks, and then he was here for about 2 years, I think, before he went down into the flat country, mm-hmm, doing a little mining.
Mm-hmm.
Came to the country, didn't know any English, and he came with another man from Austria. They both came from mining farming communities, mm-hmm, in the Alps, but my dad never liked farming. And in Europe, he had worked in the coal mines in Germany and Austria. So when he first came to the country in Pennsylvania, they both worked in coal mines because they came over steerage and they had no money after they got here. So they had to work their way across country, but their destination was Alaska.
They knew that from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad said when he was in school, he read history books, geography about Alaska, and always wanted to come. So, and he wasn't a young man when he came, he was probably in his 30s.
Oh, and then your mom joined you later, or was she here?
Mm-mm. They came from the same hometown, and after he was here about 10 years, and they were corresponding all this time, she came over. And he met her, she came over first class, he came over steerage. And he met her in New York, and they got married. Mom said she never saw much of the United States because they went by train across the country, got to Seattle, and took the boat. And then they came into Flat through down the Yukon.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were coming in, a court party was also going to Flat to try some cases. And of course, she didn't know any English either. And Mr. Pratt, whose son was a judge here,
mm-hmm,
was one of the attorneys on the trip, and he was trying to teach Mom some words. He'd say chair, you know, table,
mm-hmm,
trying to teach Mom a little English.
So did you live in Flat very long?
My older brother and I were born in Flat, and when I was I think I was less than 2 years old, we left Flat, mm-hmm, by dog team and for Fairbanks in December, in the winter time. And it was a two-week dog team trip.
Oh my.
Two dog teams, one with our supplies and things, mm-hmm, and then the other one with my mother and the two children, my brother Al and I. And because of her health, we left. And so then in the spring, we came to, 2 months later, she went to the hospital and we stayed with some friends in Seward. And then in the spring, we came to Fairbanks and went up to Fox Gulch, which is about 3 or 4 miles beyond Fox,
mm-hmm,
on the Elliott Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed there one summer, I think it was, and then there was a former partner of my dad lived there, and he did a little mining, but there wasn't enough for a family and him. So then we moved down to Fox, and the FE company was in operation. My dad worked for the FE company, and we stayed in Fox until 1930.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school. There used to be a little small gauge railroad, and the school is about 2.5 miles up the railroad track. So Al and I went to school there my first year and his first and second year. And then they built a new school right in Fox. And that school was only used 1 year because in order to have 9 months of school, you had to have at least 5 children. And Max Reedy, who had the store, his wife went outside and took Maxine with him, his daughter. And that only left 4 kids, school teachers, 2 kids, and Al and I. And so there couldn't be a school. So then we moved to town in 1930, and I've lived here ever since.
It changed a lot.
Yes, yeah. It's a small town at that time, and it has really spread. Used to know everybody in town. You went down the street, you knew everybody. Went to the theater, and you saw everyone, and you always looked to see if so-and-so was there, because they always went to the show.
I guess when I'm thinking of, when you think about your life in here, not having lived anywhere else, it's difficult to sort of compare your life, or how would you think it would be here as compared to anywhere else. But do you think living in Alaska makes you sort of a different person? I mean, how do you...
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Did you ever have any yen to live anywhere else?
No, I do not want to live anywhere else. I never have. I worked in Anchorage about a year, 1 year, during the war years.
Uh-huh.
And I liked it, but I still like living. And I have no desire to move outside at all.
What were some of the things that influenced you as you were growing up? People or circumstances?
Both yeah. People and circumstances.
Do you think of anything specific?
I don't think. I can't think of anything. Sometimes you're blank.
You say
your
dad worked for the Yankee Company. He worked for the
Yes.
Yankee Company here in town for many years.
He worked, like at Esther and Fox, mm-hmm. and you know, different places. He was when he started on the points and that, and then he became a panner on the dredges,
mm-hmm.
and they had cleanups every week, and on cleanup day he would go from one dredge to the other, and they had about 5 or 6 dredges. So at the end of that day he was very tired.
Yeah,
but he was a real good panner. And then in the winter time a lot of times he'd go prospecting. That was his, he loved prospecting. Never made anything, but he liked to be out in the country.
Oh yeah, most of us do. How did you find Fairbanks as a place to grow up?
It was a good place to grow up in, I think, and we had a lot of good times. And I was very, very shy when I grew up, mm-hmm. when I was growing up. So I only had a few real good friends,
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then we had a couple old time friends that, this Eddie Burden that lived out at Fox Gulch. We would go out there on Sundays a lot of times and take our food and our friends with us and just spend the day and had a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another old friend that lived in Esther, old John Michael, and he had an old Model T Ford, and he'd come in and gather us all up and we'd have our...
All of us, how many children were there in your family?
There was only 3, but then we'd bring some of our friends, and
mm-hmm.
Mom always came along. She did the cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go out there and have dinner out there and just roam around all over and really enjoyed the out of doors.
Mm-hmm.
Then some of our friends had, we've never had a car, so some of our friends had, the Driscolls had a car, and they'd take us out to Harding Lake sometimes. And we just, I don't know, growing up was fun.
Good place to grow up.
Yeah.
So you went off through school here?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you end up in your job in the court for which you're
After I graduated, I worked part-time for the Reconstruction Finance Company, which had an office in this building in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked, I got $25 a month, which was part-time work. But my boss, who was Larry Doheny and who had known me all my life, he worked, he would go out to like Caribou Creek and out to Livengood. It was Livengood Plasters and Brinker Johnson. And then they had loans. They were loans, art, reconstruction finance loans for these mining constructions to, you know, get on their feet. So he'd be out of town. And when he came to town, a lot of times he'd come over to my house to get me to do up this letter, whatever he had to get out right away. But I finally got so that when he came, I went out the back door. Because, as I said, I was very quiet and shy, so I didn't want to hurt his feelings, so I never would want to confront him. But if I wasn't there, he couldn't get me. And he worked me anyway, because I was there 8 hours a day, you know, anytime he was in town. But it was good experience, and he would never let a letter go out with it looking bad or erasures. Or, so that was the best experience I ever had. And he was a good man. I enjoyed working for him. Then went, and then I went to college for 2 years. Doheny. D-O-H-N-O-H-E-N-Y. Doheny. And then I went to college, university, for 2 years. I graduated in 1940, and I went to college from 40 to 42. And during that time, I still worked for Larry, but I was part-time then. Mm-hmm. I also got a raise to $75 a month. So, and you could do quite a little with that. You know,
yeah.
Even with 25, I bought all my clothes, and, you know, it wasn't all that bad. But he was a good, he was a good boss to have, the first boss, because he wouldn't let you get by with sloppy work.
Yeah,
that's very important. And that's very important. Mm-hmm. Then I worked, then during the war years, I worked out at the LAD Air Force Base and transferred to Anchorage and lived there about a year and came back. Worked at First National Bank for about 6 months. And then at Pan Am for about 6 months. And then I think I went back to the base. Yeah, I did. Because when the war was over, I was still working at the, I was working at the base.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't any work to do. You know, you sat there day after day. So I decided I had to get another job so I could, the pay wasn't bad, but you can't sit there doing nothing. So I went to work for, I don't know what they were, Surplus Property. They were over there at the FE company. Had, it was a Quonset hut in the FE company property. And Cy Clawson was there. He was a soldier yet. And there were a lot of local, Les Dodson and Ralph Dodson were working over there. But I liked the people I worked for, but the girl, my boss, was a woman that cussed constantly. And I got real tired of that. And it's not that I'm a prude, but I just, and Harry Palmer, who I went to college with, knew that I was dissatisfied, and he said, "Olga, I know a good job for you." So he said, "It's in the clerk's office, and you should go and see Dixie Hall." I told him you were going to come see him. And I said, "Well, Harry, I know nothing about the courts, so I don't think I have much chance." He said, "You go see him anyway." So I said, "All right." Dixie Hall wanted to hire local people.
Boy, that's great.
Yeah. And there were a lot of people. That was one of the best jobs in town at the time. And a lot of people had applied. So he had a big choice of people that he could have hired. So I came over and talked to him, and he said, "Okay, when can you come to work?" And I said, "Well, you know, I never expected to get the job like that." I said, "Well, I have to give 2 weeks' notice." So he said, "Okay, I expect to see you here on March the 31st. That was in 1946. So I went home and told my folks I had a new job, and my dad says, "Nobody ever hired anyone like that. Are you sure you have a job?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to turn in my resignation." So, so I did. And I had worked, then I worked for Dixie Hall. There were only the two of us in the office. And he was in court whenever there was court. And in those days, we took care of all the mercantile licenses for the whole 4th Judicial District. We also took care of all the liquor licenses. And And also, when there was voting, when the votes came in, we'd tab them.
Gosh, and exciting.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And of course, our workload wasn't all that big, but we were busy, you know, pretty much all the time. But then eventually, those other jobs went, you know, to other agencies. But it was an interesting time, and you knew all the people around. So I worked there for him until 19. We turned our records over to the state court in February of 1960.
Mm-hmm.
And Dixie didn't like the new operation. Everything was different. And in court, you had to have a recording. And we still had court reporters, see, at that time, shorthand.
Oh, yeah.
But he was in court, and he would take notes for the journal and for the files, because not everything is typed by the court reporter unless it's on appeal. See, so the little notes that went into the file was from the person that was in court, from the clerk that was in court. So he didn't like the machine. He battled the machine, and I tried to talk him into staying on but not going into court, because then with statehood we had two judges instead of one.
Mm-hmm.
And Judge Hepp was one of the judges, and Judge Rabinowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't see not being in court, because he'd been in court 35 years, you know. So, and I told him, I said, with two courts, you're going to have a deputy in one of the courts, so there's no reason to have a full clerk in the other court. But it was hard for him not to be in court. He, you know, that was his life. So he resigned in June of 1960, and Judge Hepp appointed me July 1st of 1960, and I was the clerk of the court. Then after I got the job, I wondered if I could handle it, because I never supervised anybody. Mm-hmm. And we had more employees at that time, too. We had about five, I think. But I managed.
Yeah, I'm sure you found you were very capable.
But it scares you. Yeah,
it
scares you a little.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I thought, gee, here I wanted the job, and now that I got it, can I handle it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
But you were actually very successful on your job. And do you think that the confidence just came, or you, as you moved on the job?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. After I got the job then and knew it was going to be mine, why? There was no doubt that I couldn't handle it, but it was a little frightening at first,
mm-hmm.
because I thought, I knew I could handle the work.
Mm-hmm.
That part didn't bother me at all. And Judge Hepp knew that he didn't have to worry what was going on in the office,
mm-hmm.
because he knew if I got stuck, I was going to check it out with him,
mm-hmm.
see that I didn't do something wrong.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of applicants for that job, too. And some of them were trying to get it into a political situation.
Oh, yeah, which would be a terrible mistake.
Yeah, and he didn't go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that, he evidently knew that I could probably handle it.
So, you had people around you who saw your potential even when you didn't?
Probably. So, and then we moved out of this building, I think in 1963, to the new state building.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it grew and grew. But it was interesting. I liked to be there.
What are some of the highlights you remember from living here? I mean, in your life, the real highlights that stand out in your mind when you think of your life?
Well, during the war years, when we had the Russians that came in on that Lend-Lease,
mm-hmm.
and they would fly our planes. Our planes came here. They would fly them back to Russia, and they bought all kinds of things from. We had the old Gordon store, and they used to say that they had things that didn't move for years and years, old things.
Until the Russians came.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And Harry Avakov, he sold them a lot of jewelry and things, They had our lend lease money to spend, and then they went on to Russia. And that was quite an interesting time. And then we had dignitaries from time to time. Eisenhower was here at one time.
But for you personally?
Personally? I just liked the old time atmosphere. And when you went into the stores, everyone knew you. You knew everybody. I liked that type.
The home feeling in the
small
town.
Yeah.
I guess you got to know a lot of people through the court too.
Yes. Yeah. You do.
And in those days, it wasn't hard to know everybody.
No.
Hard with me, Christine.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then when it got bigger, you know, a lot of people knew me. I mean, they might have been in court one time or on the jury once, and they know who you are. And then if you went somewhere and they want to introduce you, oh yeah, I know Olga. And then I'd have to figure out who they were, because you might have only seen them once, but they could identify with you a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and then when we got our sewer system, you know, and didn't have well water, that was a big day.
Mm-hmm.
Had city water, which is the best thing that ever happened, I think, to Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
But we had well water, and then we had cesspools, and then when the city came in, then of course we got the whole works of plumbing and stuff, and that was a big day for the community. You know, you didn't have
the
cement sidewalks.
No.
You know, that was another endless paving.
How did you find sort of law and justice? Did that change with statehood? Or did you always think it was relatively fair, really? I mean, you don't have much basis for comparison.
No, we don't. No, I thought we had good justice here. I thought we did.
And did you think things changed with statehood appreciably in any way, positive or negative things?
Not. I don't think they changed a whole lot with statehood. No.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that often, you know, we're sort of shaped by our environment, or do you think that living in Alaska brings out a different sort of person out of one's character? I mean, for better or for worse?
I don't think so.
You just are what you are no matter where you are?
I think so.
Yeah.
I feel that way. People came to Alaska for all different reasons, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I think we had good people. You know, of course, you always have bad apples, no matter where you are.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
but on the whole.
But I don't think that. Yeah, on the whole, I think we have good people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think the sort of bad ones you leave out and go home? Do it take a little bit more to live here?
I think it does. Yeah, it takes a little more to live here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the weather is as bad as it used to be, however.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we grew up, the weather was much more severe.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the winters were longer. And in October, we had lots of snow. So I think that a lot of people couldn't stand, you know, the type of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that bothered most people. But now it didn't bother our friends and the community I lived in. They just took it in their stride, and they didn't have the money to go anywhere else anyway. So, you know, everyone enjoyed where they were. They didn't, you know, we didn't have a lot, but we never lacked for anything, I think. The neighborhood that I grew up in had about 10 different nationalities within like on 6th and 7th Avenue. A lot of foreign born. And everyone got along fine. There was all quite large families and small families in the block, but everyone got along fine together.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Makes for a better adult.
Yeah.
That makes you have greater awareness of what life is about.
That's right.
For different people, which is so necessary.
That's right.
Especially, it must have been very helpful for you in your job.
Yeah.
To have this awareness. I mean, you've got to have a broader scope to look at things than the average person in the position.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you're speaking. You know.
Yeah.
You need to be able to see it.
I enjoyed my work as long as I was there, but when I retired, I was very happy not to be there anymore.
What did you do now that you retired?
I don't always know what I'm doing, but I'm busy all the time.
Yeah.
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 And I belong to the Pioneer Auxiliary, and I'm secretary for that, and that keeps me pretty busy. And they have a lot of functions during the year that keep you busy. And then I visit friends, and no, I don't always know what I do, but I'm busy.
Yeah.
I have a yard to take care of and a little garden, mm-hmm. and that keeps me busy, just getting the grass cut.
When you look back in your life, is there anything you think, you generally so pleased with how it worked out?
Yeah, I don't have any regrets in my life. I probably would have been nice if I did get married, but I didn't. So I don't worry about that too much. Mm-hmm. So,
another
a lot of friends.
You took life sort of as it came along.
Like, right. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you conscious of that philosophy? You don't seem to have ever worried very much. Is that?
No, I don't worry very much.
Life seemed to open up when it was necessary.
Yeah.
Open up.
Yeah. Well, you have your ups and downs at times.
Mm-hmm.
But no life is perfect, you know?
Just the way it comes along.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people try to manipulate their life a great deal to have it seem to work better. I sometimes wonder if you just sort of flow with it, it doesn't work any better.
Yeah.
And just relax when the things come along at the right time when you're ready for them.
Yeah, that's right.
So often we think we're ready for things and they don't, when we're not. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they don't happen. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just a thought.
Yeah.
But I sort of have a sense that you float along with your life.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed life. When I was younger, I liked to dance and, mm-hmm. you know, I went to parties and, you know, enjoyed having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Now you enjoy
being
where you are.
Are there
any
yeah.
stages you like to enjoy, stages of your life as it went along?
Well, I think in the 30s, when I was in the 30s, I enjoyed life probably
mm-hmm.
more.
That's a good age for women.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. And in the 40s,
yeah.
Maybe every age.
I don't worry. Right? Yeah, I don't worry about the age too much. You
yeah.
know.
Just wherever you are, it's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything else that you know that you would like to say about your life?
Or? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.